Today's Overreaction Pod, we are talking Washington, Oregon, obviously, Notre Dame, USC. We'll do our small sample Heisman. We'll say something nice. We'll talk about Iowa, the offensively challenged, headed for 11-1 season.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
What do you got right here? And when you can get points, it's like these coaches are opposed. They've become like religiously opposed to field goals.
Russ Dellinger.
Yeah, under Marcus Freeman, the Notre Dame roller coaster is like nothing I have ever seen from a team.
And SI's Pat Forte.
You can say analytics and you can say be aggressive and all that sort of thing, but it's not working for Dan Lanning. They lost the Washington game this way last year.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. It has been a long time since the game of the week, let alone the game of the year, maybe, occurred in the Pac-12, let alone Seattle, Washington. You were both there. Washington, 36. Oregon, 33. Six lead changes. Each team had a two-point conversion. Both teams had a 300-yard passer, a 100-yard rusher, and a 100-yard receiver. Huskies had two of those. There were six fourth down attempts, and we're going to discuss that. From the start, you knew this was legit. It was high energy, high-skilled. It ends. Dan Lanning goes for it on fourth and three. Oregon's got the ball. They get it. Is it fourth and three or fourth and two? I don't know. Whatever.
Fourth and three.
That's right. Yeah.
If they get it, they win. They don't. Washington gets the ball at their own 47. Two quite dramatic Michael Penix Jr. passes later. 35 yards to Jalen Polk. Then a touchdown throw to Rome Odunze. They go ahead. The Ducks come back. Washington sits and plays the prevent. They don't blitz. Blitz, blitz, please blitz. I don't even care who won the game, and I was screaming blitz. Ducks roll back. They get a 43-yard field goal wide right, channeling some Florida State back in the day. Huskies win. Penix may have won the Heisman. We'll see. There's a long way to go for Washington. Oregon's chances are rocked, but again, the Pac-12 is a cannibalistic group this year. Penix, 22 at 37, 302, four touchdowns and one pick. Bo Nix for Oregon, 33, 44, 337, two touchdowns. All sorts of controversy, everything going on. Pat, let's start with the, let's go right before we get to the scene down there, because I know it was wild and it was a lot of purple, but let's just talk about these decisions. I think you had strong opinions on Dan Lanning's game management.
Pat, strong opinions? Get out of here.
Yeah, believe it or not. The fourth down dunce of college football? Yes,
oh.
I did.
Wow.
Have some strong opinions. Well, Dan Lanning, I mean, that's his thing. But when your thing keeps not working, maybe you should try a different thing. He's a fourth down go-for-it guy. Be aggressive. And that's I love these guys, you know, especially like the social media is full of, well, yeah, you got to be aggressive. You got to play to win. Those are also guys that presumably hit on 18 in blackjack. And guess what happens when you do that? Most of the time you bust and you lose. So as a fan of not beating yourself and making the other team beat you, I took issue with all three of his fourth down and three go-for-it calls. Maybe the first and the last, the most, the middle one, eh. But the first one, at the end of the first half, they're trailing 22-18, fourth and three on the Washington 3-yard line. You're going to get the ball to start the second half. You've just gotten an interception from Michael Penix, who doesn't throw many. I think you need to take advantage of that gift, kick the field goal, get the ball back, and go score again and take the lead. He goes for it. They throw a sprint out to the boundary. The primary receiver just basically gets run out of bounds, and there's the, like eight guys in the end zone. There's no way you're throwing it in there successfully, incomplete. Then in the third quarter, fourth and three, I believe, maybe like the 8-yard line of Washington. They go for it again. They don't make it. And then, of course, the big one, as Dan mentioned, fourth and three from the 47-yard, Washington 47-yard line with 2 minutes and 16 seconds to play. I can understand certainly some reticence to giving Michael Penix another chance, but you've stopped them the last three possessions. You can kick the ball down and make them go 80 or more yards with no timeouts. I say make them do it to beat you. Instead, he says, no, we're going for it again, fourth and three, and we run another bad play, and we throw a half roll to the left, and it's incomplete again, and boom, boom, two plays later, all of a sudden you're behind. And they were actually lucky it only took two plays for Washington because it did give them that chance at the end. But, you know, you can say analytics and you can say be aggressive and all that sort of thing, but it's not working for Dan Lanning. They lost the Washington game this way last year by going for a fourth and one on their own 33-yard line in a tie game and giving Washington a field goal to win. So that's two straight years now he's lost big games to a rival team in which his fourth down decisions have blown up on him. And he said last year, it's 100% on me. This year, 100% on me. Well, how about if you make a decision that doesn't end up with you having to say it's 100% on me? That's my thought.
Yeah, I asked Kalen DeBoer, does your offense and does your quarterback impact the decisions from opposing coaches? And he said, yeah. He said, we see that. We've seen that quite a bit over the last year and a half. But he did make a note, what Pat has mentioned, is that Dan Lanning is kind of aggressive to begin with, and you throw in the fact that you've got Michael Penix on the other side, and I think that Michael Penix not only throws for touchdowns and leads victories, but he also impacts decisions from the other coach, and I think we saw that. I had more of an issue with the first two than the last one, especially the one before halftime. I just that one is just completely mystifying. You get a gift on the INT and you don't kick, and you get the biggest, I think, biggest issue there is you get the ball back to start the second half, kick the field goal, take the points. The last one, yeah, it's just, I do think it's a Michael Penix decision. You, like a lot of them, you don't want to give him the ball back at all, whether from the 5 or from the 47. But keep in mind, I think there was 2:11 on the clock. So if you punt, they'll be right around 2 minutes or so. And I think Washington was out of timeouts, right?
They were.
Didn't have any time.
Yep.
Yeah. So man, yeah. It was incredible. I was down the field for the final sequence there, and I was standing right behind Phil Knight, actually the big Nike founder and Oregon booster.
Hold on. It's just the latest this week's Ross. My life is cool. Name.
I got to go on a few yachts too.
Private jet. Yeah. Did you get on Phil's plane? Did you get to fly on the plane? Were you texting with Commissioner Sankey?
All right, enough.
All right, go ahead.
Okay.
To make your point.
But anyway, the sideline was it went from just total elation after that third down completion. Right on Oregon's second to last drive, and then on the fourth down, just to this awful letdown, and then it happened so quickly, two plays, like 35 seconds. Michael Penix, just incredible.
So these fourth downs, it's tricky, right? I was watching and could not believe take the points at the end of the half. I agree. Analytics can be great. It's like moderation, everything in moderation, including sometimes moderation, but everything's in moderation. That's how I describe my drinking scenarios. Everything. There's times you just have to have a feel for the game. The problem with analytics, as particularly in college football, is the variances are so wild. And it's like, what has your team got?
Yeah.
I used to say this in the NFL. It's like, well, it's fourth and two. should you go for it? And it'd be like, well, yeah, if you have Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski, you go for it. If you don't, you don't. Like there's certain times when it's like, oh, well, they make the play. We'll make it 50 point. Well, what percent? Who are you playing, right? Like, you know, Ohio State, Penn State, and Michigan could score on every fourth down yesterday. They could do anything they wanted in the games. These were those whatever numbers you're putting up against bad teams, half the bad. What do you got right here? And when you can get points, it's like these coaches are opposed. They've become like religiously opposed to field goals.
Yeah.
And it's like swung back.
Yeah.
I'm reminded. I remember a guy telling me, remember, like, you know, where do we all learn football? How do we all learn football? And most people say, oh, my dad or my, you know, played, you know, even seventh grade football. No, you learn it from the announcers. That's where you mm-hmm. learn football. And announcers, mm-hmm. particularly, they're a little better now. But when, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago, they were incredibly conservative, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there was John Madden saying that the Patriots should take a knee and not let Tom Brady try to win the Super Bowl against the Rams. There was a minute 48 left. Like, what? Mm-hmm. Like, imagine a coach doing that now. You'd be fine. I think on Saturday night, Jason Garrett at Notre Dame, like, it was like USC was down 18 points. They're on fourth down in their own territory. He's like, believe it or not, you got to go for it here. Like, no kidding, you know, right? But we've learned so, but it's kind of swung back where it's like, well, you can't take a field goal. Field goals are worthless. It's like, not really. You need points.
Yeah.
Yeah. You win the game with points, not touchdowns.
You got to get points. I watched Wisconsin go for it on fourth and down against Iowa. It was 0-0 yes. game. Nobody can move the ball. I'm like, you may win this game 6-3.
Yeah. Oh,
you know, like you need points. And sometimes they just are like, no, we got to go with a knockout blow. All gas, no brakes. We don't back down. So those ones I had big issues with. There's are two field goals that would have changed the ball game before we even got to the fourth quarter. Now, could game strategy changes, and you can't just sit there and say, well, there's your 3 points. But the last one, I'm a little bit more hesitant. It also depends what kind of punter do you have. Can you punt it down inside the 20? Are you going to blast it into the end zone? What do you have? It's just different. There's so many different variables. I don't believe in analytics because I just don't think the analytics properly can call for the unique situations of teams, because college football analytics are just so very, it's not 162 game baseball season where all the teams are fairly even. The sport's a total, you know, show, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That was my thing with that. Like, gosh, man, that's a lot of aggressiveness. And like you said, it seemed like every play was the same one too, wasn't it?
Yeah,
like
they were all similar.
Similar
sort of sprint outs, flows, throws to the boundary, and they did not go well. And that's so I did actually dig in a little bit to the numbers. So Oregon was 8 out of 10 on fourth downs coming into this game, which is obviously a great percentage.
But against who?
Well, that's it. They were like Portland State, a couple of them, Colorado, several, Hawaii, one against Texas Tech. And in every situation, they were winning. Most of them, they were winning comfortably. And most of them were 4th and 1 or 4th and 2. The only one longer than a 4th and 2 that they converted was a fake punt against Colorado. So, you know, this is a better opponent. This is a more stressful situation. And your quarterback, as good as Bo Nix had played, had not done well executing the other two 4th and 3s. But they roll it out. Let's do it again, by golly. And here's what I got them.
Yesterday, Penn State was 7 of 9 on 3rd down and 1 of 1 on 4th down. So 8 of 9 in when they got the 3rd down, at least.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's against UMass. Try it next week in Columbus.
Right. Yeah.
If you do that, okay, you're going to win the national title. It ain't going to happen. You can't. These numbers are pointless. You weren't playing a real team. Portland State's not a real team. So I always just question that. Go ahead, Pat. Or Ross,
yeah, no. No, I was just saying that, yes, you can't just look at some sheet and say, well, this is the probability we get this first down, because there's way too much else that goes into it. And if you can't factor that in on the fly, and occasionally maybe send the kicking team out there, field goal unit, punting team, whatever, as opposed to, we're aggressive. That's it, period. You got to be able to, there's got to be a little nuance and a little discernment, I think, that goes into these decisions.
Well, and I know the kicker missed the 43-yarder. I wasn't sure on his kicking ability. I didn't look at the stats or anything. But, I mean, those two field goals he passed on, one would have been like, what, 24 yards, 25
yards? Yeah, they were
chip
shots.
Yeah, the other were 30 yards. Yeah. I mean,
chip shots aren't easy. Have you ever golfed? Chip shot is a tough shot. I hate that term. Not easy. Not easy chipping.
My short game's better than my long game.
So well, there you go.
But way better than Dan Lanning's decision making was.
I had less problem at the end of the game than I did with those other two. You know, it really Oregon got like I think it was Ross said they got lucky that Washington scored so quickly. You know, and it was this mysterious clock stoppage. I don't know what that was about. It was a mysterious clock stoppage after the first pass. Nobody called timeout, but they could have burned off. It would have been an issue, but it was a home game, so I don't know. Anyway, Washington now in the driver's seat. The problem is that driver's seat is about to enter the Indy 500. Arizona State and at Stanford the next 2 weeks, but then at USC, Utah, at Oregon State, Washington State to end the year, and then a Pac-12 championship game, if you can navigate that. The final four of those teams are all ranked. What are your thoughts on the Huskies from here on out as playoff contenders, Ross?
Well, I certainly feel better about their chances after what happened in South Bend, Indiana, yesterday with USC getting rolled. And look, we can talk about that game later, but kind of a lot of people probably saw that coming in a lot of ways, at least a loss for USC. But yeah, I think you look at what Oregon State has done, you look at in the past, at least what Utah has done, being a spoiler, and who it's a USC, Utah,
Washington,
Oregon State, and then Washington State. I mean,
those last two are going to be
egg yesterday, but yeah, you're talking about some teams that you that because of your decision, right? They are kind of, or partly because of your decision, they're left with no league and in a very much uncertain future. But there are, Washington is certainly not perfect, right? They ran the ball better against Oregon than I thought they would. They actually had 100, like you mentioned, they had 100-yard rusher, Dylan Johnson. So they ran the ball pretty well. They didn't defend pass or run very well at times. Oregon's second half was kind of exposed Washington a little bit. I mean, Oregon ended up having like almost 550 yards of offense. So there are definitely some concerns. What I feel like we did see, and Kalen DeBoer talked about this afterward, what we did see from Washington is just that, man, that like that fight in the end, and the heroics from a guy who is certainly, I think right now, especially after what happened with Caleb Williams, is the front runner for the Heisman. But the stretch looms for sure. And I'd be most concerned out of all those games. I'd be most concerned with that Oregon State. They seem to be playing really good. It's there. That's going to be interesting. November 18th.
Beavers' huge win last night against UCLA. Incredible defensive performance. Really got all over Dante Moore and the Bruins. So if we don't get to that, great win by the Beavers. Pat?
Yeah, this is just going to be, it's going to be a phenomenal stretch run in the Pac-12. Because there are, legitimately five or six, and heck, throw in Arizona, maybe seven tough teams to beat in that league. Arizona's lost two games, both in overtime.
Double.
And that's
double
it.
OT, or they'd be 5-1.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right. They're four and three.
Yeah, they did lose also to Washington. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, yeah. But yes, USC and Mississippi State both were double OT losses. So I mean, it's going to be really good. I really don't think you need to be an undefeated Pac-12 champion to make the playoff. Now, two losses gets tricky, but if you're a one-loss Pac-12 champion, I think you're probably going to have a resume that can get you in. We'll see. We'll see how the committee is viewing this league, but they've done the most in non-conference play. of any other conference. They've got, obviously, they've got one undefeated, but they've got Oregon with one loss, USC with one loss, Utah with one loss, Oregon State with one loss. And they're going to play each other, and it's just going to be slobber knocker after slobber knocker, I think. I think Washington has the talent to get it done. I don't know yet, to Ross's point. Defensively, they're okay. They're not great. Now, Oregon's a very good offense, too. But, you know, there's no perfect team out there in the West, but there are a lot of very good ones, and I can't wait to see how this all plays out.
Yeah, there's definitely scars. Yeah. There's a lot of scarring in the Pac-12 from previous adventures. when I was in the when I was after the game, I don't even remember who it was. It was somebody with either the Pac-12 or either with Washington. Like, came up to me and it's like, "Oh, you know what's gonna happen here?" And I'm like, "What? What's that?" Like, freaking Utah is gonna upset, you know, somebody, and we're gonna be left out again. You know, the scarring in the Pac-12 is just hilarious, man.
Utah's like the nail, the little, like, if you have a wood floor, like the tack that keeps coming up, right? Like, you can't, God dang, ruin another pair of socks. Speaking of not impressive, I guess, USC, Notre Dame wins 48-20 on Saturday night. Total debacle for the Trojans. A great win for Notre Dame. We'll get a little bit to that. But Caleb Williams, 23-37, 199, one touchdown, three picks, six sacks. There was an interception Notre Dame started at the 12. There was an interception Notre Dame started at the 2. There was an interception Notre Dame started at the 50. There was a Xavier Watts scoop and score fumble recovery. And Notre Dame had a 99-yard kickoff return for a touchdown.
My goodness.
That'll do it. Mm-hmm. Notre Dame scored 48 points, and handsome Sam Hartman just sat there stroking his beard and only threw for 126 yards. If you said, "Hey, Saturday, handsome Sam, 126. You go, boom, Trojans 48, Notre Dame 20. No, other way. Great game, by the way. Xavier Watts, defensive back for Notre Dame. Two picks, a scoop and score, seven tackles, and a pass breakup. Tremendous performance. Notre Dame defense was great. Give them all the credit for that. But this Trojan team just ain't it.
No.
It's the entire team is Caleb Williams running around for his life, just making insane plays or not. That's apparently the strategy here. Again, with Lincoln Riley in big games, you're just like, what is this? This team was not ready to go. Pat, you watch any of this?
I did not get to see any of it. I was following along, obviously. And yeah, Notre Dame had 251 total yards and 48 points. That does not compute at all.
That's crazy.
Didn't need to.
Wild.
No, didn't need to. But that, look, USC all season has been a little smoke and mirrors, right? They've been obviously super potent offense, very talented quarterback, but you get them start make mistakes and bad things happen because they sure aren't going to play enough defense, even though holding opponent to 250 yards isn't that bad. But a -5 turnover margin is going to get you beaten by anybody, and Notre Dame's still a good enough team that that'll get you beaten down by them. So, you know, out of all the contenders in the Pac-12, USC looks the worst. They've got the most holes, the most flaws, and we will see, you know, if everybody stays in the boat there, so to speak, especially if they lose another game. They still haven't lost a Pac-12 game, so plenty for them to play for. They host Utah, but that has been a bad matchup for them under Lincoln Riley last 2 years. Utah just ran through them, much more physical, and I don't have a whole lot of faith that this USC team has turned things around physically. But then they also close Washington at Oregon, UCLA. Hell of a schedule left.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we all kind of knew. In fact, some props to our friend at the AP, Ralph Russo, who for the last few weeks said, it's coming. Like, don't buy USC. It's coming. They're frauds. And man, yeah, we saw it. I was shocked. I didn't get to watch the game either. Pat and I were both in the writing zone after the Washington game. But, you know, one thing that after seeing highlights, One thing that surprised me was just the amount under duress and pressure that Caleb Williams was endured during that game, and just him not handling that well. I mean, some of his, at least two of his interceptions were awful, right? Just under pressure and just bad passes, just poor decisions. And you're not used to that as much with him. So that was surprising to see. And again, now with his outing and what we saw in Seattle, I think the Heisman race kind of shifts a little.
Heisman opens up big time for Caleb. But as you said, but this is still a dangerous team. And it's a dangerous team because they still have Caleb Williams, who's awesome. The three picks. I will recap the game for you who did not visually see it. Okay. I will paint the picture for you. Okay. You ready? It's my great, great command of the English language.
I can't wait
Caleb
for this.
Williams hucking balls in the air and Notre Dame guys running the other way. That was the entire game. That's all. Every time I looked up, it was like, what? There's a Notre Dame guy sprinting through the field. Notre Dame, how about this? 49 total plays, 48 points. Now, there's probably somewhere a record, and one of our listeners can give it to us. I tried to Google, like, most points, fewest plays. It doesn't even come up on Google. Yeah. Like, I couldn't even – is this a record? Is the record kept? Has anyone ever had more points than plays? Notre Dame didn't quite get there, but 49 plays, 48 points. That's like Golden State 2012 efficiency in basketball. Like, just what the heck is this? Analyze that. Analytic. Put that in the analytics. Anyway.
I will say, look, Marcus Freeman, again, keeping us off balance. Right? Every time you start thinking, I'm not sure whether we can do it. Oh, we're just going to blow out undefeated USC here at home. You know,
6-2.
Under Marcus Freeman, the Notre Dame roller coaster is like nothing I have ever seen from a team. Mm-hmm. I mean, to lose to Stanford and Marshall last year, beat Clemson and North Carolina this year, you know, to beat USC and who else they beat? They beat another good team, didn't they?
They had that dramatic win against Duke after having the dramatic Duke. Loss to Ohio State, and then they lose
then they
pretty handily
to
Louisville.
Yeah, it's just bizarre, and I can't figure it out. When we made the picks, I remember saying like, man, I want to pick Notre Dame so badly in this game because you know that USC has it coming. It's got one of these coming, and it's just not looking good, and I just couldn't do it. This like roller coaster that Notre Dame fans must be on under Marcus Freeman has been pretty wild.
They survived four straight weeks of ranked opponents, two on the road. They went 2-2. They're now 6-2.
Thing too, by the way, Dan, let me interrupt really quickly. Yeah. Like people hound Notre Dame for, they make their own schedule and they can play whoever they want and they got the cupcakes. Their schedule is loaded. Like, their schedule is good. I mean, it was pretty good last year. It's good this year.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Well, they dominate the ACC, but, I mean, they hadn't lost till that Louisville game. And then Louisville, Pat, great call on the banana peel game. Louisville goes to Pitt and poop, see ya.
Yeah.
That's why we can't have nice things.
Yeah. And that's another one where statistically – weird. They lose by 17 points to Pitt. They outgained Pitt 444 to 288, but minus three turnover margin, which will usually get you.
Biggest predictor of wins and losses, apparently. Yeah, no. So that's where we're at with that. We'll see. Notre Dame can settle in, and Marcus Freeman, 10-2, is not out of the question here, which would be pretty strong. The Clemson game does not look like the gauntlet late is not what turned out to be the gauntlet early. So, and really, man, I mean, that 10 men, they're sitting there at 11-1 with Ohio State victory. It could be in really good shape, but anyway, good for Marcus Freeman and Notre Dame. They had the Saturday night they wanted there. A little SEC, Tennessee comeback victory over A&M because of course A&M loves allowing comeback victories. I think they're lost their last eight on the road under Jimbo Fisher. They're 4-3. We can just pencil them in for 7-5, 8-4, I think. And that's just how it's going to be. But Tennessee wins 20-13. Aggies maybe kicking themselves. Alabama beats Arkansas, holds them off. I think it was 27-24. I didn't write down the score. Whatever it was, I was watching that because it got really interesting late. Arkansas made a push, 24-21. Mm-hmm. It was a three-point game. KJ Jefferson, Nick Saban talked about it. He had this one play where he was literally sacked, and he just threw the guy, he threw the Alabama tackler off like it was pro wrestling, and then made a pass.
What did he say? Like a gnat on a cow's ass?
Cow's ass, I think is what he said.
Yeah.
That's
great.
That's like peak SEC compliment. Peak SEC compliment when you're talking cows and gnats and things like that. They really love that thing down there. And so KJ should feel very proud. He's like, wait, am I the cow? Am I the, what am I? Anyway, Bama wins.
You're calling me a cow?
Tennessee wins. I don't know. It was Coach Saban, man. Wasn't me. I don't want KJ mad at me. Like I said, he threw the guy away. Big game next week. That's probably, I mean, the Vanderbilt finally scored a touchdown. South Carolina blew another game to Florida. Missouri had a great victory at Kentucky. Kentucky fell apart late. They need to buy more players, clearly, than Missouri. It's that Missouri collective's doing too much. Anyway, thoughts on SEC play in general? You could pick any of those. It wasn't a huge week for SEC. It was just sort of positioning week.
I think things are getting ready to get really expensive in College Station.
That's what I think.
It will cost an absolute fortune to get rid of Jimbo Fisher, but at some point they're going to do it. They're going to be sick of 8-4, 7-5, which is where they're trending right now. They are 4-3 with games left against Mississippi and LSU, and they're not going to win the SEC West again. They spent all that money. They brought in Bobby Petrino, and I know they had a quarterback injury, so you're playing with a backup, but still they've scored a total of 33 points in their last two games. There's just not enough there to suggest that this is going to go ever the way it was supposed to go with Jimbo Fisher. So, this will be the ultimate test of how much silly money there is for a program in college football, because it would cost, I don't know, what, $70 million or something to get rid of Jimbo? Mm-hmm. But I think there's going to be a lot of people that want to get rid of Jimbo.
Yeah, that's what I was going to talk about as well, as the heat there now in College Station. I don't know what the price of oil is per barrel, but oftentimes
probably
that will,
going up
impact the things that happens in College Station when it comes to spending buyouts and such. I always like things like this, like, you know, Jimbo Fisher's buyouts are in 70 to 75 million or so. So I like Googled, like, what can you buy for $70 million? There's a few islands that can be purchased for $70 million, of course. You can buy 35,000 hot tubs for about $70 million.
35,000.
Uh-huh. Yeah, $70 million. Yeah. 6,000 Harley Davidson motorcycles. Oh,
Bobby.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Bobby Petrino.
In around
Bobby Petrino divorce.
Yes, yes. In 8,000 Hawaiian vacations.
Mm. All right. So, that's nice. Yeah. Good shopping list there. Look, they need to be better. They had the 1-9 in 1 year during COVID. I actually don't believe this, but I'm going to make this point, okay? Because I think any school, when you get it going, can win, and there's no reason a team in the state of Texas can't do really well. But, like, they've had one 10-win season since 1998.
Yeah.
They went 11-2 in 2012 with Kevin Sumlin and Johnny Manziel. Is that Manziel's year?
Yep, yep. Sure was.
Yeah.
The Manziel year before he really started boozing.
Mm-hmm.
They did have a 9-1 season in 2020, when obviously, you know, that would be a 10-win season. But, like, historically, this is a 7-6, 8-5 school, if that.
Mm-hmm.
And I get they want to be good, but at some like it's not like Ohio State going 8-4, and you go, something's wrong here. We win 10 at minimum. It's like we're never good. And I'm not saying you stick with Jimbo longer, but at some point it's just sort of like, I don't like, you get what I'm saying? I don't, I'm not saying keep him, but it's like $75 million to be like, we have to win 10, 11 games. Like you never win 10 and 11 games.
I know. But do you see, Dan, you're bringing sense into this. And this is college football. And think of the amount of money they have spent in terms of facilities and staff and contracts to try to be to try to be a 10-win team. And, you know, I think when they went in the SEC, they ratcheted up the expectations for themselves internally. And they still haven't met them, but I think they still feel hell-bent to try and meet them. And so I think when they hired Jimbo, that was like, this is it. This is our guy. This is a guy who's won a national championship. He's going to do it. And it's not working to the extent that they want it to work. And yeah, it may be this is who they are historically, but they don't want to be that program.
Yeah. I agree.
I was computing really quickly. Power Five games that they play. I think their last 22 games against Power Five teams. This dates back to 2021, which is the year, the year after they went 9-1. And they are, let's see, they are 9-13. 9-13 in their last 22 Power Five games. So it's been a somewhat free fall from that 9-1 year. And the thing is, I don't know how, because they're the first year of NIL, they signed the number one class in the country.
Mm-hmm. Those guys are sophomores
and
now.
There's talent there. It boggles my mind historically how a place that has so many resources and loves football so much can't be consistently successful. And when I went there for the Alabama game last weekend, I mean, just like the pageantry and the passion in that stadium. I mean, it's like this place should be winning, like, certainly more than 9 of your last 22 Power Five games.
Yeah, it's just it's a befuddlement on how this actually occurs. I don't know.
But also, there's a little bit of the way he's coaching, and I think Sam Kahn of The Athletic put this out. I don't remember the exact stat that Sam had tweeted, but I think it was twice. It's happened once in the last two games with Texas A&M where they've gotten the ball back with like a minute or a minute and a half, I think it is, to go in the half. And they kneeled the ball, or they ran the ball. They ran out the clock purposely.
Really?
So
Dan Lanning sure as doesn't like to hear that.
Yeah.
So there's that. But the other point is just some of the decisions made in the game against Alabama, for instance, that Jimbo made, and we talked about him last week, were just kind of coaching really conservative and almost scared.
Yeah, they got injuries, but everyone's got injuries. That's part of it. I don't know. It's the trend. You go there. And you go, how can't this place be incredible?
Yeah.
I don't know. And A&M's like, College Station is a small town, but it's a classic college town. It's also like the way Houston has grown. It's like not even an hour from parts of Houston.
And yeah, and College Station itself has boomed.
Yeah, really, and
the
that's
last
boomed.
Like 10
yeah.
years. I think it's doubled in size.
You're right. The There's kids there. So. It's not that small, and it's not that far out in the middle of nowhere, and it's very centrally located. It shouldn't – it really should be Houston's team. Maybe it is. I don't know. But yeah, it's just not. It's not happening. And I don't know what to go with that. Ohio State and Penn State both rolled Saturday, setting up a mega matchup in Columbus next week. We'll talk a lot about that going forward. The Big Ten has been fairly dull because of those guys aren't doing anything.
Because of
forgot
Iowa?
Because of Iowa. I'll get to Iowa. We're gonna get to Iowa. Fantastic.
gotta get to Iowa.
quickly.
Lock of the week.
Coach, play me my theme music. I'm up 29-0, and I lose to Stanford. 46-43 in double OT. Total debacle. I admit, I went to bed. Travis, I was like, Travis Hunter's fucking awesome. Go to bed, wake up the next morning. There's a bunch of texts on my phone. I'm like, what is this? Alik Iomanar, is that it? They're Stanford tight end, 13 catches for 294 yards and 3 touchdowns, including one with the ball pinned against Travis Hunter's helmet as he dragged him 10 yards in the end zone.
Yeah.
Like, you're like, did they put Travis Kelce out there? Did they slip him in? Like, what is going on? Incredible. I didn't see the game because I thought it was over. This would be my question, Pat. Coach Prime, look, they get killed by Oregon. You got to bounce back. But generally speaking, his coaching career has been very positive. They might lose a game here or there, but he won a ton of games at Jackson. This is they got a week off, but this is a how do I keep my team together kind of loss, right?
Huge damaging loss. I mean, if getting to bowl eligibility, it's a huge loss. You've got to beat Stanford at home, and they were ahead 29-0. That's when I quit paying attention. I didn't go to bed, but I was having a late dinner with some guys, and then somebody's like, hey, what did it end up being the final score of that game? And we looked, it's like, oh, my God, it's not over, and it's only a 7-point game, and Stanford's driving. What? And we watched the end of it. It was astounding. But, no, that's a very bad loss. That's a really bad loss. And, yeah, you've got 4 ranked teams left on your schedule. You close at Washington State at Utah. I mean – so Coach Prime could end up being, heck, maybe 5-7. Maybe they don't win again. Maybe they're 4-8. And then I think we have to calibrate, okay, how good was this season? That's why it's a full season. September was the month of Deion. October, not so much so far. And we will see how he can regroup for them to go play UCLA.
Yeah, this is if they lose out which I don't expect them to do, but if they were to, it's still right. Had a season that I think on two fronts. One, they won 3 more games than they did a year ago. And two, the publicity and attention on Colorado is just it's unfathomable probably how much attention in they're getting in from a media and marketing side, and what that will mean going forward for the university, for recruiting, for our applications. It's been a success no matter what, is my point. Even if they like lose out, but yeah, they've got to win 2 of these next 5 games to go to a bowl, which I think everybody after their 3-1 start would have penciled in. At UCLA, they get a bye this week. At UCLA, Oregon State, Arizona, at Washington State, at Utah.
Yeah, brutal.
That's I don't of all the times to try to get to a bowl with that stretch in the Pac-12, this is a tough year to do it.
And I want to see how they play. I will say this though about they blew that game, and it showed lack of focus and complacency, as Prime was saying, and all that stuff. But they also were capable of an absolutely brilliant first half.
Yeah.
And that's the issue with that team. I mean, when you watch that first half, you're like, gosh, they look good, you know? And then, but as we said, Arizona looked like a weaker team. They could be 5-1 right now. They're not, but they're a very good team. There is at UCLA might be their easiest game.
I mean,
we'll see what the Cougars of Washington State are late in the year. But Coach Prime now has to keep his team together. We have not seen him try to coach that way. A couple quick ones. New Mexico State's 4-3. Diego Pavia, our star quarterback, who allegedly urinated on the Lobo at the University of New Mexico, arch rival New Mexico's practically Lobo logo.
Yep.
20 of 36, 2 TDs. I also ran for a TD. Am I giving the Aggies a little mention because they sent me a package of alcohol on Saturday?
Yeah.
Absolutely yes. Yeah. Absolutely yes.
You got more alcohol from them?
Absolutely yes. Go Aggies. Oh, they have a shot at the playoff or at a bowl game. I do not know how they lost to UMass in the opener, but they're 4-3. Jerry Kill doing a great job there. Thank you, Aggies. No, and speaking of UMass, if you're not, Sean is not here today. If you, he's in like South Dakota. I don't know what he's like drinking, going to like FCS games. If you don't show up, you get made fun of. And his, he went 4-1-1 in his picks last week. Picking UMass plus 42.5 at Penn State was one of the all-time worst picks in the history of Race for the Case. And that is saying something.
That was his lock?
He took UMass? I thought he took Penn State. He took UMass? Oh, my.
No, he took UMass.
Oh man. Oh, hey, Pat, how did your lock work out of the week?
I don't remember. I don't recall. Moving on. Next topic.
Next topic. Yeah. What? No, not next topic. The Brian Ferentz update of the week. I am now an unabashed Iowa fan. Iowa 15, Wisconsin 6. I watched too much of this game considering Oregon and Washington were going on. It was incredible. The offense is now down to 20, or they're scoring 20.85, but they are 6-1. Ferentz ain't getting to 25. This offense is no chance.
They
got to
average
like
30 a game, I think, from here on out.
Yeah, they're forget it. Forget it. Okay?
It's over.
I watched this, and then I got some stats. The Dyack Partners Custom Staffing Solutions stats of the week. They send me stats. Right, they give me tickets to the Michigan game.
Perfect.
Custom Staffing Solutions, Dyack Partners.
Ridiculous.
Listen, someone wants to do some work for me, I'm willing for plugs. New Mexico. This is the grift section of the Dan Wetzel grift section of the pod. Iowa, 10 punts, 9 first downs, 9 three and outs. They were 6 of 14 through the air for 34 yards.
Jesus.
They're in all sorts of trouble. Eric All got hurt. He may be gone for the year. They did complete 2 passes to a wide receiver. They had 60.
Yep.
They had 68 yards of total offense in the second half.
Ooh.
Okay.
First time in a game or two, right?
LaShawn Williams busted an 82-yard touchdown that, like, If a fire-breathing dragon walked into my living room this afternoon, I'd be less surprised occurred. It was just out of nowhere.
Dan, your tweet like halfway through the game, or I don't remember when it was, and it was like, it was a stat that ESPN or whoever
Fox
was in the game put it up, and it said, hey, Fox, and it said, 3 total yards in last 6 drives.
Yeah, 6 drives, 3 yards. Not possible. No, that was it. The Fox graphics people were just having a field day. Like, stars of the game, they put the punters up. They were just trolling this game the whole time. If you take LaShawn Williams' touchdown out, Iowa averaged 2.5 yards per play. They won by 9.
I know.
They're 6-1. I'm telling you, you can't stop the Hawkeye train. It's heading to Indy, baby. They will lose 45-3 against whatever the Big Ten East puts. I don't even care which one of this little triumvirate over in the East. But go Hawkeyes.
Go ahead, Ross.
No, I was going to say this is why they're getting rid of divisions in the Big Ten. It's absurd. That Big Ten West is just misery.
Total.
The 2 catches by a wide receiver were both by Nico Reganey.
Yeah.
One was for 7 yards, one was for 6.
Yeah, it was a little slant. It's kind of a tight end route. It was nothing. Yeah.
Deacon Hill, 6 of 14 for 37 yards, and they won. And they won by 2 scores. I mean, it's just like
could have been
this
more.
This is unbelievable. Yeah.
They almost had a touchdown fumble recovery, but it squirted out and Wisconsin got it, and there was only a safety, or there would have been more points. And Wisconsin switched to the air raid, not going well, by the way, and they're just constant booing up at Camp Randall. All the students were doing was sitting around to do jump around. They hate their team. Not how Luke Fickell wanted to start this thing. You could feel the hate coming through.
So here's my provocative question. Should Kirk Ferentz be the Big Ten Coach of the Year? Or should Kirk Ferentz be run out of Iowa City for having a defense that could win a national championship but an offense that can't do anything?
Both?
I think maybe both.
I don't know.
It's unbelievable.
There is a beauty to it. There is a beauty. It's like looking at a hurricane when it's perfectly formed. And you're like, this will cause mayhem and destruction and is an awful, terrible thing. But God, that thing looks beautiful from space. So I don't know.
Their final five, like they are definitely winning the West. Their final five games, Minnesota, Northwestern, Rutgers, Illinois, Nebraska. None of them are any good. Rutgers could lose five games.
They could lose them all too.
They could lose a game.
They could lose them all.
Could they lose? They might be able to take another loss.
Oh, I'm sure.
And still win the division.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're going to win a tiebreaker now with Wisconsin.
Yeah, unbelievable.
They roll in at 9-3 with the worst offense in the country, and against the Buckeyes or the Wolverines or something. Yeah.
All right, two more quick results: Colorado School of Mines 45, South Dakota School of Mines 22. The School of Mines battle.
Big miner showdown, Ore diggers. That's your Colorado School of Mines.
The diggers?
The ore diggers.
Ore diggers. Okay.
Ore diggers.
Yep.
Fat Bear Week finale. Grazer ran away with it again. The photo was the problem.
Oh.
Listen. It was like a Venezuelan election. It was a bunch of garbage. Do better, National Park Service.
You're like the fans that, you know, find a freeze frame of a defensive back grabbing a jersey of a receiver and say, see, they were holding this all game and they got away with it.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, that's that. All right. We don't like waiting until the end of the year to hand out a Heisman Trophy. So let's hand them out each week, our small sample Heisman. Does anyone have a Heisman Trophy they want to hand out?
Yeah, I got one.
You do? All right,
it is.
Go for it, Ron.
Preferably someone we didn't already discuss. But yeah.
Punter Tory Taylor. 10 punts, 50.6 yards a punt, booted a 62-yarder. How about that? Give it up for the Iowa punter. They don't win that game without these punts, Dan.
Wisconsin punter was good too, by the way. Yeah, punting is winning. Pat?
Yeah, well, clearly it is. Clearly it is. I'm going to go to the Washington-Oregon game, but I'm not going to give it to the obvious guy, Michael Penix, or even to the great receivers, Jalen Polk or Rome Odunze. I'm going to give it to Dylan Johnson, who had the 100-yard rushing game, and I thought really helped them have some offensive balance and keep Oregon's pass rush a little bit in check because they had to honor the run. Dylan Johnson, 20 carries for 100 yards, some tough yards, broke some tackles, picked his holes extremely well, and I think was just a very important part of Washington's being able to go up and down the field and win the game. So Dylan Johnson, my small sample Heisman.
Small sample Heisman right there. All right, I'm going to give my Heisman to Omarion Hampton, running back of North Carolina. 24 carries, 197 yards. He had a 60-yarder, scored a touchdown. Drake May was only 17 of 33. He had four touchdowns in this game, but was not brilliant. North Carolina rolled Miami 41-31. The game was close. That is closer than the game really was. It was in command in the third quarter. Miami led at half, but North Carolina took over in the third. And Devontae Walker could have given it to him. He had a big three touchdowns, six reception, 132-yard receiving. He had a 56-yarder. Anyway, Carolina rolled. This team is 6-0, quietly banging along. Hasn't gotten a lot of attention, but could be very easily come out of the ACC. Miami drops two in a row and falls back, but great job by those guys. You think Drake May is going to be the star at North Carolina? They got a whole bunch of talent at old Sally and I's team. We
Coach Max always been able to recruit.
Always been able to recruit, and they're putting it out there. So Tar Heels 6-0 and are going to be a focus the rest of the way. I have no doubt. All right, we said a lot of mean things. Can we say something nice? Pat Forty, can you say something nice about somebody on this podcast? Can you do it?
I can. Not even left-handed nice. It's for real nice. Oh. Missouri, outstanding victory at Kentucky. Kentucky has been a nemesis for Missouri through the years recently, and Tigers go into Lexington, fall behind 21-20 going into the fourth quarter, and then score the last 18 points of the game to get to 6-1. They had a fake punt touchdown pass earlier on. They had Corey Schrader, running back, had 71 yards rushing and also 15 receiving. They just did enough stuff to win when Missouri sometimes historically does enough stuff to lose. So got three turnovers for the defense. Missouri is 6-1 and has a chance to add a few more victories to that total down the stretch.
Yeah, has there been a more surprising team, I think, this year? I mean, I think if you were given the choice before the season, Missouri would be 6-1 or 1-6 after 7 weeks. A lot of people probably would have said 1-6, and they probably should have beat LSU. They had them in the fourth quarter. Incredible work with Eli Drinkwitz and Brady Cook, quarterback. I've got something nice. I've got some things nice, just a couple of things nice. Earlier this week, a picture emerged from the Pitt football facility of a vase in the entrance where players were supposed to put all of their negative thoughts into this vase. It's a very small little vase. And it was very weird. It's odd. It certainly was a joke. Was made fun of all week, as you'd expect. But then Pitt went out and beat Louisville, given their first loss in the Pitt football Twitter account. I urge you to go find this. Posted the score and a graphic that included the blue vase on it. So rubbing it in all of our faces. Very good, Pitt. Well done, Pat Narduzzi. The other quick say something nice is the Florida Gators, which mounting a crazy comeback, down 10 with 5 minutes left in the game at South Carolina. Graham Mertz led the Gators back. They converted a 4th-and-11 in a 4th-and-10 on the final couple drives to win the game. The Gators are 5-2. And I thought before the season that Florida's Vegas is over under for Florida. I think it was at 5.5 was the bet of the year. Like take the over on the Gators. I wish I would have. But they're 5-2 and rolling right now. They'll have Georgia, I believe, next.
Yeah, they get a week off, and we'll see what Brock Bowers' status is for that for Georgia. He sprained an ankle in their win against Vanderbilt.
I'm going to say something nice about the Hail Mary. Rarely works. Worked twice this weekend, starting Thursday night. Houston quarterback Donovan Smith chucks one into the end zone last play of the game to Stephon Johnson after it gets tipped by West Virginia. Cougars win. This was after West Virginia scored on a 50-yard touchdown pass or a long pass with 12 seconds left. Garrett Green threw that one, then gets called for unsportsmanlike conduct, which I don't know what the penalty was. They didn't have any replay, but I hate unsportsmanlike conduct penalties when you've just thought you won the game.
Yeah.
Did he take off his helmet? Did he run down there and go crazy? Yeah. But whatever. Hail Mary by Houston, perfectly executed. And then Saturday night, Boise State's leading 30-24 when Colorado State's Braden Fowler Nicolosi throws it into the waiting arms of Dalen Holker for another one. And the Colorado State wins 31-30 over the Broncos. Two Hail Marys in two games, in 3 days in college football. Got to watch the end, these games. Can't give up on anything. Wild times, and nothing better than the Hail Mary, right, Pat?
It's great. You love it when they work, unless it works against your team. But tell you what, football in Colorado, not dull. Between Coach Prime and the Buffs, Air Force is undefeated, and then the Hail Mary comeback for Colorado State.
Yeah. I'll say this about Coach Prime. Every game is interesting.
Yes.
One way or the other. Yeah. One way or the other. All right, that is our show. We will be back on Tuesday. Big week coming up. We talked about Ohio State hosting Penn State is the big dog, but there's a whole bunch of other stuff going on. Should be an interesting week, so please come back on Tuesday. Every show, subscribe, leave us a nice message, or share us on social media. Tell your friends about us, and mostly keep listening. We appreciate the loyalty of all of our people here. We will talk to you later.